Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations Podcast. I'm Jeff Gamet. Today is Thursday, August 7th, 2014. And with me back today, again,
The beautiful John Martellaro.
It's like you took the words out of my mouth. You really did. The beautiful, the elegant, the effervescent John Martellaro.
Good morning. Nice to be here.
Good morning. And the always exciting and
erudite
and security savvy Kelly Gumont.
Good morning, Jeff.
Good morning. I fully intend at some point in the show today to be able to bask in the gloriousness of your laugh. See, there you go. That's just infectious. It's a wonderful sound.
Well, thank you.
It is.
Okay, the first thing I thought we would hit today is a piece that you wrote yesterday, Kelly.
Mm-hmm.
And spoiler alert, actually everything we're going to talk about today is stuff that you wrote.
I'm just along for the ride today.
Hi, I'm Kelly. I have a lot to say. We brought John along for decoration.
Yeah, as one does.
You know.
Anyhow, so the piece that I thought we'd talk about first is the news that Apple hired Catherine Monnier, who used to work for Yves Saint Laurent, and now is working under Paul Denevey, also from YSL, and working on secret projects or special projects.
Special projects, yes.
Yeah.
And the current rumor is that, sources told 9to5Mac that the special project that they're in the midst of at the moment is revamping the retail strategy to be able to sell other stuff, like something perhaps a bit more fashionable. Maybe you wear it on your arm and it communicates with your phone. And that's an interesting idea to me, but even more interesting to me is one of the people who commented on the story who said, I'm starting to wonder if there will be an iWatch bracelet thingy, but maybe we're going to see a wearable framework that anyone can tap into with hardware tags. And I don't know if I necessarily need my shirt to be able to communicate with my phone, because what I'm worried about is that if inevitably someone will make a fashion app and your phone will just buzz loudly at you if you put the wrong things together.
You know, but actually, I'm all up for that. I want digital Garanimals for adult clothes.
Okay, now that might be okay. Like, but I need to be able to expand some parameters. Like, if you really think you can get away with that, then you go with your bad self. But I really like the idea of a wearable framework, because it allows for other things besides putting something on my arm. Part of the reason that I don't wear a watch most of the time now is because my primary, the biggest piece of my day is typing on my computer, and so rubbing my metal watch band against my metal computer is not comfortable. And when I have to use a computer that has a plastic shell, I just end up wearing a groove in it. So that it was either the computer or the watch had to go, and we can all tell what Kelly's decision was going to be pretty early on. So that for me was the biggest interest there in making it a framework, another kit. You know, like we had HomeKit and HealthKit, some other sort of technology that maybe makes this happen. And I also like, when you zoom out a little bit, when you look at some of this stuff, like fashion there's still manufacturing items, just like Apple is. They're still having to predict the demand for the new thing that they're putting out in the fall, just like Apple is. And they end up having to do a lot of similar sorts of things, even though some people are doing it for, for YSL, probably, you know, things like handbags and various items of clothing, where Apple is doing it with iPods and iPhones and laptops. So I think that there's probably some similarity there and a lot of overlap. It's not like they just hired somebody because they worked at the right fashion house, but I very much enjoy the idea of bringing something new to Apple.
Yeah, I'm totally cool with that too. And I'm going to stay in the wearables rabbit hole for just a moment longer. If Apple did a framework, the way I could see it working is they make the hardware component, which would be the badge, that goes into the clothing, and then there's an API so that the clothing manufacturers know how to hook into this, and then you buy the clothing, and it has a little pocket that you slide into. And you're seeing things sort of like this, but it's not unified like Apple do. You know, there are companies that are making all kinds of wearable fitness stuff. Like shirts and shorts and underpants that can track your activity and then feed that back to apps on your iPhone. So, and as a matter of fact, if anyone is involved in anything like that, let me know because I really want to talk to you. I'm very interested in
definitely
this whole field.
Hey, Jeff.
Now, yes.
I did have a thought on Catherine Monnier's hiring.
And I was about to hop back to you because I just had a feeling.
Yeah.
So now we're out of the rabbit hole. Take it away, John.
So from my experience, which was some time ago at Apple, Apple would hire executives from other companies who weren't exactly clued into the Apple culture. And because they were in a position of authority at these other companies, they would come into Apple. And Apple would hire them for their expertise, but they also thought they were in charge and they would try to do things that were outside of the bounds of the way Apple works and Apple Marketing Communications and Katie Cotton and Phil Schiller's way of doing things, and they would get into a little bit of trouble. From all these hirings that I've seen lately, very senior executives from other companies and fashion designers and physicians and other executives in YSL, I kind of get the feeling that the atmosphere has shifted a little bit under Tim Cook, and that these people coming in are not only being hired by their expertise, but they're being hired to, you know, actually manage and exercise their leadership in a way that will be helpful for Apple. It's just a feeling I'm getting about Tim Cook's new management style.
That would definitely be a big change in the way, in the way Apple has handled their, I'll call it higher level hirings.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. That would be a big philosophical switch. But you're right. They've been hiring a lot of high level people, and we haven't seen them bailing from the company.
Right. I expect there to be a few notable departures in the spring, where some of these hires discovered that either their job is done, or they think that they're done, or they can't quite abide by the Apple restrictions in the way of doing things, and how they can't talk to the press and, you know, do the things that they wanted to do, but. It remains to be seen. I don't think there'll be too many this time because Tim Cook's a different kind of leader.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, clearly. Yeah.
Well, and we've seen Angela. Like, this isn't the kind of thing where they nabbed somebody and made a big deal about it and then that person has faded into the background. Angela Ahrens, who's now the head of retail, has been visiting stores and, you know, sending memos to people and generally more hands-on. So I think, John, that does lend weight to your theory.
Yeah, I think it's
to your theory.
It's Tim's recognition that when you're $150 billion, you need a lot of people to exercise leadership and management. The executive team had remained rather small for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it seems like there's a big change in the hiring philosophy. And well, you know, part of that may be because Apple is clearly getting into a new market, and they may have needed to just hire across the board to have the staff for that market, as opposed to just spread around responsibilities among people that they already had.
Yeah, they're going to take a lot of people by surprise with this energy into a new market. It's going to be jaw dropping. I think people aren't going to be prepared for the energy that Apple's putting into this new market.
I have a feeling you're right. I have a feeling there's a lot of people that are going to be very surprised, and there will be a lot of current competitors to Apple and about to be competitors to Apple that are essentially caught with their pants down.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay. The other topic that I wanted to look at today is actually it's going to kind of turn out to be more of a PSA, I think. And this is the piece you wrote yesterday, Kelly, about Crypto Locker.
Yeah.
And how a group has figured out how to decrypt the encrypted files. And for people that have no idea what CryptoLocker is, it is a malware that targeted primarily Windows users, or was it exclusively Windows users? I'm not sure.
CryptoLocker, I think, was exclusively Windows.
Okay, so it targeted Windows users, and what would happen is once it was on your computer, it would start encrypting files and then displaying dialogues demanding a payment to unlock your files. And so that sort of malware is often referred to as ransomware, because your files are being held for ransom. And so this group has figured out how to reverse engineer and then decrypt files that are encrypted by CryptoLocker. But there's more. So I'll let you run with it, Kelly.
Well, the interesting thing about this is the way that this happened. And the security, one of the security researchers went on record saying, "We got lucky. Make no mistake. We got lucky in making this happen," because they were further along in infiltrating and being able to take down the organization that was distributing this malware than the organization initially thought. The organization thought somebody was onto them and started trying to hide it, but law enforcement had already gotten a hold of some of the code and so was able to reverse engineer from the piece that they had that nobody knew they had. At least for people who were infected with straight up CryptoLocker, a way to sort this out. Now, earlier this week, I covered CinnoLocker, and Jeff, you covered this too, which is a variant of this, which encrypts the items on your network attached storage, specifically if you have one from Synology and haven't updated your software lately. There's a hole in that has subsequently been patched. So as long as you update your software, you'll be fine. Where it would encrypt your NAS, and you would be asked for payment, and it ended up being between like $300-$350 that you would pay to somebody. And then they would give you the decryption key. And these security researchers were able to reverse engineer this. So you take one of these encrypted files and upload it to them. They say don't use anything with information in it that you don't want them to see. There may be music or, you know, a picture, like a landscape photo or, you know, something like that isn't going to necessarily be something you would be embarrassed if somebody else looked at. They will be able to take that file and send the key back to you. And the thing that they said is they can't guarantee that it will work on variants like CinnoLocker, but that it's possible that it could, because they're not entirely certain what the differences are that make something like CinnoLocker a variant. So they're not sure how great the difference is, so it's possible it might work. But this is another one of those, I think Dave and I earlier this week said the same sort of thing. You need to be most of what makes people secure when they look at things, and maybe John can back me up on this as TMO's security poster boy, it's awareness. The first and most important thing you can do is be aware. If you're going to check the box on the thing to do some stuff, make sure you know what that means. And that doesn't mean, you know, it's the same sort of thing as like putting a different kind of gas in your car. Like, you don't necessarily have to know how it travels through the engine, but you do need to know, if I put leaded gasoline in my unleaded only car, something bad might happen. You know, my car has a whole lot of miles on it, it's probably time I switch to synthetic oil when I get my next oil change. You know, what you need to know is the basic overview of that. It's going to impact my car by maybe making it last longer, because synthetic oil is a little nicer to the engine parts. And if you are a gearhead, I look forward to your letters. But having enough of an understanding that if you do this, you sort of get what the impact is if it all goes terribly wrong, is really the most important thing that you can do. So don't go in and just start checking boxes because this sounds awesome and that sounds awesome. Because what you could be doing, particularly if you didn't change the password to something different than what is printed in the manual, which is also bad, is you end up with leaving an unlocked door sitting open on your network. And anybody who wants to and doesn't have to try that hard can get into your network that way. And if they can get into your network via one device, it's usually not that big a deal to start getting into other things, because most people don't have a lot of individual security on the other devices across their network. So like at my house, I don't necessarily have a lot of stuff, a lot of security measures taken on my computer, because I've taken them all on my router and I've taken them all with what's allowed, what sort of traffic is allowed in and out. And I don't have my NAS set up so that I can access it externally. And there are very specific rules and reasons, and I've got all that stuff locked down pretty tight with my router. So if you were able to get into my router, it might not be too complicated to get into my laptop at the same time.
You know, Kelly, in a broader sense, you're into very specific things here, but in a broader sense, and I've written about this before, I recommend everyone sort of become a put on their IT manager hat, if they can stand it, and sort of sit down and take an inventory of their systems and kind of size up what it is they want to achieve with their systems,
right,
and then what things they have to enable. So the default is you shut everything down, and then you think about, what do I need to support in my family? What do I need to turn on? What are the implications? And sort of make a checklist, you know, and go to your router and go to your iPhone and start turning things off until you realize that you need them to have them on, and sort of have an overall strategy about what you're going to do, what software you're going to install. Like, you know, I run Intego Virus Barrier because I'm all over the net looking for stuff all day long, and I'm in different places. So I like to have something scanning the HTTP stream as it comes into my Mac, you know, looking for malware and stuff like that. So, you know, and I don't have my Synology turned on for external access like you. And there's other little things that I do that sort of have a sort of a philosophy or strategy about how I handle my Macs. Different passwords on every Mac.
Yep.
So if they break into one, they don't have the passwords to the other.
Right.
Things like that. So I recommend that people sort of sit down in an afternoon with a clipboard, sheet of paper, and sort of take an inventory of all of the functions and features that they're advertising or that they're using, and try to figure out whether they really need them and things like that.
And I would tack on to that, don't assume that the defaults are necessarily for you.
Right.
Take a good look at what those are, because there are some brands of NAS that you get one and you take it out of the box and you plug it in and you turn it on, and a lot of stuff is enabled by default that you may not need or ever use. And the reason this is interesting is because also turning off some of that stuff can give you a performance boost. You know, just like there are things that you can turn off on your phone to make things a little faster on your phone, and there's certain functionality that's limited. Like if you're running iOS 7 on an iPhone 4, you don't necessarily get everything that iOS 7 has to offer if you have a 4S or a 5 or a 5S, because the oomph isn't there. And then there are additional things you can turn off to help make it even faster. And some of this stuff, doing it takes time and effort, and this isn't necessarily limited to network storage. This can be on your own computer. It can be on your router, on any of these other things. There's a lot of stuff.
Especially your iPhone. I remember one afternoon I sat down with my iPhone. I went through every setting in the preferences, and I said, well, I don't need that, and I don't need that. Oh, if I need that later, I'll turn it on.
Yeah.
You know, and so on, especially with the ability of apps to either push notifications to me or identify my location. I have a handful of apps that I know and I trust that I've reviewed or from developers I trust. And then the other guys don't get privileges until I think I need them and they're turned off.
And I think those are, you know, and again, that's awareness. It's knowing what you have on your phone and what it's doing on your phone. And it's the biggest piece of security and awareness that you can put together.
All right. So we are out of time, and that was awesome info. So a quick wrap up of that would be, when you get a new device that has any type of network or internet connection, change whatever the default passwords are, and then look and see if it has any features that are running that you are not going to use, and shut those off. And those are two big things that you can do to help make sure that that you are less vulnerable when you're on the internet.
Yes.
All right. Absolutely.
Thank you, both of you, for joining me today.
Of course.
That was an awesome discussion, and hopefully helpful to a lot of people.
fingers crossed.